The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back as we head into hour two of our daily three-hour tour this Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. It's a delight to bring back my good friend David Riaboy. He is worth following on Twitter. If you don't already follow him, please do if you want to stay informed and up on the currents of all things national security and political. He's a national security and political consultant and writer at Twitter. He is at Dave Riaboy, D-A-V-E-R-E-A-B-O-I. Dave, how are you, man?
I'm okay. I'm pretty pissed.
Yeah.
If I could say that. Can I say that on the radio?
Once. I will let you do it once. We're not Fox News.
I've done it. It slipped through.
We're not Fox. It's not verboten, but it's... We prefer ticked. We prefer ticked. Or
right,
angry.
Right,
or
right.
Furious.
Right.
I am, too. I am, too. I spent the last half hour on this.
Think?
Yeah, talk to us.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, no, talk to us about this.
Everyone's caught up. I don't know. I mean, I've started to think lately about this thing that I kind of call provisionally the anti-Semitism of tropes.
Yeah.
Which is, at some point a few years ago, we got obsessed with this idea of the trope. And I guess the trope comes from fiction, and it means kind of a stock narrative.
Right.
That kind of will show up and repeat, and you just kind of plug it in as necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people started talking about things that they called so-called anti-Semitic tropes,
right?
Meaning Jews and money and things like that.
Right. Right. The negative use of the word Zionist, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. But. But I never really understood it, because it's like, if you're, for example, blood libel, medieval blood libel,
right,
or things like that, it's
right,
like, that's not really a trope.
No.
That's a lie.
Right. Right.
And it's not bad because it's a trope. It's bad because it's a lie.
Right.
Because it's a lie that's used to, to kill Jews throughout the millennia.
Mm-hmm.
And then what ends up happening is this trope thing ends up growing to ensnare all kinds of things that are not really anti-Semitism,
right,
by any reasonable definition.
Right.
And the same thing has happened to racism. So, I mean, I think really a lot of the grievance folks kind of moved over from racism, and now really it's proliferated everywhere. I mean, you can say things. I mean, I'm sure out there are a ton of anti-death tropes and tropes related to every possible demographic and other kind of group. So you get to the crazy point where a few years ago, or in 2016, Ted Cruz was called was accused of using an anti-Semitic trope when he referred to Donald Trump's New York values.
Right.
Now, unless New York is now synonymous with Judaism,
right,
or Jews.
Right.
That is completely absurd.
Right.
And especially as you're talking about a guy who is not Jewish from New York.
Right.
It's completely absurd. And yet,
right, two non-Jews talking
right,
about each other. Right. Right. Whereas right, we would have no misunderstanding and no worry about someone speaking of Texas values. Of course we know what that means. Immediately we know what that means, right?
Right, right.
Rugged individualism, a little bit red. We know what New York values are. It has nothing to do with Judaism. The only people who think that are Jesse Jackson, who went farther than a trope.
Right. No, exactly. And it's like, I mean, I'm sorry, but if you see, one of the things that kind of makes me crazy about sort of modern political correctness, if you will, or whatever this is that we're talking about, is this idea that people in the in-group can say something,
mm-hmm,
that people in the out-group would be completely destroyed for saying.
Correct. Correct.
And that's not right, whether it's like, you know.
Not if you're big enough to enter the public sphere of debate and politics. Exactly.
Right. I mean, I'm sorry, but if you want to talk about New York values and cosmopolitanness and New York Jews, guess what? Woody Allen's movies, you know, which I love, are full of them.
Right.
And if anyone, if anyone on the right, be they Jewish or not Jewish, were to say a line for Annie Hall, you know, they would get canceled today.
Right.
This is all madness. So,
right.
So pulling it back to where we are and what you were talking about with Soros, the idea that attacking Soros as anti-Semitic is obviously in bad faith.
It's in total bad faith. I gotta tell you, maybe you're better at this than I am, but David, I didn't even realize he was. I've been hip to the kind of bad stuff George Soros has been involved in since the 90s, especially when it comes to the drug issue, which I did battle against a lot of his organizations with. It never even dawned on me to know he was Jewish until I was told it was anti-Semitic about 3 or 4 years ago to say his name. I didn't even know he was Jewish.
Right. And you know what? Honestly, there's a special place in hell for someone like him and for his children who very cynically... I mean, they have no they have no connection to Jews or Judaism at all.
None.
Personally.
None. Yeah.
It's deeply cynical for them to come out and say, "Hey, guys, push this thing just to protect us, get us off the front pages because we want to in effect ban criticism."
Exactly.
So the whole premise is based on the fact that we're not allowed to talk about Jews with money funding things. Jews with money controlling things. So now I guess we're not allowed to talk about any Jews with money controlling anything.
If they happen to have been born Jewish, and that's it.
Right.
And that's it.
That will come as a tremendous shock to people on the left in the mainstream media who've been talking about Sheldon Adelson.
I was just going to say, it only works on one side here, David, right?
Right. No, of course. And it's so ridiculous. I mean, I had tweeted earlier, and this is true, that some of the first people that became aware of George Soros, and this is how I became aware of Soros and his activism, is when he was starting to fund anti-Israel NGOs.
Okay.
He was starting to fund Palestinian groups. He was starting to fund moderate left Israeli groups and far left Israeli groups. And then he came, and I think in 2004 or 2005, he decided to create from whole cloth an organization called J Street, which was supposed to be the kind of left wing version of AIPAC, which is actually itself left wing.
Right.
So Israel,
AIPAC is as
right.
Yes, exactly right. AIPAC is as part of the Democratic Party as the ADL is. Right.
But what they wanted was to create because up until that time the Jewish community in the United States was very very strongly supportive of Israel and they thought this was a tremendous problem and they wanted to address this problem by creating a group that would sort of at first be AstroTurf, but then, after you spend millions and tens of millions and more in order to build up this group, it does create some kind of legitimate grassroots support on the left, which is they wanted to build a group that would undermine Jewish support for Israel in the United States.
Yeah.
And that's what they did, and that's what it is. And the fact that this guy, of all people, can have the chutzpah to use his racial or biological background, because it's not any kind of meaningful background to him, as a shield in order to deflect from his lifetime record of putting real living live Jews in physical danger, which is what he has been doing in terms of his Israel policy.
That's right.
For years is just beyond the pale, and it's infuriating. And the fact that now Fox News is trying to sort of downplay or poo-poo or sort of pseudo-censor mention of these things is crazy. Now, I think the next thing we'll see is we'll see lunatics on the left in the media claiming that Newt Gingrich, who has been no joke, probably the three or four most pro-Jewish politicians in all of America over the last 40 years.
Right, and helped pass the Jerusalem Embassy Act, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Can you stay with me another segment, David? There's so much to do here. We're talking, of course, with David Riaboy, and we're talking about what took place on Fox News earlier today when Newt Gingrich mentioned that George Soros was funding a lot of the activity we are seeing on the streets. And Melissa Francis cut him off and said, "You cannot. I wish you didn't use the name Soros." And Gingrich had to ask, "What is this, verboten?" We'll be right back. I take it every single day. That's Balance of Nature. It gives me tens of thousands of vital nutrients locked into vegetarian capsules, all made of 100% whole food plants, fruits, and vegetables, all organic, all picked at the peak of ripeness, everything good from broccoli and garlic and carrots and spinach to banana and blueberries, oranges, pineapple, papaya, over 10 servings of 31 different fruits and vegetables in one daily dose. I take it. My friends take it. My family take it. We love it, and they're doing a great deal where they're offering free shipping and 35% off any new preferred order of their fruits and veggies. Go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE, or give them a call at 800-246-8751. Delighted to have with us David Riaboy, my really good friend, and I want you to follow him on Twitter if you don't, if you want to be informed on things really smartly having to do with national security and the politics of the day, at Dave Riaboy, DaveReAboi. Dave, I'm waiting for Melissa Francis to issue some kind of clarification or apology. It was clearly a stunning moment, and the silence was quite awkward when she told him he couldn't mention she was sorry he mentioned the name George Soros. And you're quite right that we could have expected, we could have predicted that the left, and the left did, immediately went to social media to claim Newt Gingrich was an anti-Semite for mentioning George Soros. But when he did, you know, I went to the Google machine just to kind of see what had been written about George Soros lately. And son of a gun, the New York Times just a month ago had a headline story, George Soros pumping over $200 million into Black Lives Matter activity in America. And it was a long story. I don't know why it's anti-Semitic for Newt Gingrich to mention George Soros, never mentioning the Jewish faith, but not anti-Semitic for the New York Times to write about it. It's part of this whole thing you're talking about, that there is this woke shield or woke veto that certain people deploy that shuts them up, that is used as a silencer, right? Ilhan Omar has used it to a fare thee well. Others who embrace some of the intersectionality that is claimed to be precious or especially sensitive of our day, in our day, use it. It's interesting how they do it. It allows them to fire any bullet, as you say, they want, but prevents them from ever being criticized for anything they say. It's really quite immature, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's immature, and sort of how you can tell that this is weaponized is when it's transposed, when these tropes and things like that are transposed from, you know, saying something about the community at large, you know, when it goes from the community at large to sort of one person as the embodiment of that community.
Right.
That's when you know,
right.
That's when you know that this, you know, that there's some total BS happening.
Right.
For example, you can't talk about, you know, is it, is it anti-Semitic to go and say, well, you know, the media is controlled by a bunch of Jews who hate America and blah 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 blah? Yeah, of course it is. But is it anti-Semitic to say, hey, you know, let me criticize this one guy,
Jeff Bezos, the Sulzbergers, right? I don't even know if Bezos is Jewish, but right, yeah, that's the point.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know. Yeah,
but you know, Jeff Zucker or someone.
Fair enough. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like all of a sudden these people are off limits. I mean, how convenient is that? And what this does is, which you know, really really fills me with rage and you know, I guess as you saw on earlier on Twitter, is this just minimizes it minimizes really the horror of anti-Semitism, you know, in its kind of real authentic manifestation.
Right.
And I know, I mean, my grandfather who passed away a few years ago, also like Soros, also a Hungarian of Jewish descent. My grandfather, unlike Soros, was in Auschwitz, while Soros had and his family had converted to Catholicism to avoid the Holocaust. My grandfather was a great American patriot, and he despised Soros. Oh my God! If anyone would have heard him talking about George Soros, I mean, the Fox News would have been very displeased.
Yeah.
and it's like all of a sudden now also I think it's really really gross how in order to have credibility on some issue you have to be a part of this particular group.
Right.
So I mean I know that I don't want to be a kind of, you know, we say, you know, some of us on the right, we call these folks on the left who you know, they only identify themselves as Jews when they're you know, criticizing Israel or
yes.
or Judaism.
Right.
We call them as a Jew.
Yeah.
And
right.
Because they always
right.
preamble everything.
Right. As a Jew, I have to tell you.
Jew,
yeah.
Think,
right. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, I think that this whole, this whole thing is kind of nonsense and it's silly and it just feeds into identity politics. I mean, you know, okay, so maybe I have credibility, quote unquote, as a Jew to attack Soros. But you know what? As a non-Jew, so do you.
Right.
Everyone should.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, this isn't just my fight. And, you know, in the same way that, you don't have to be black in order to criticize Barack Obama.
Or Iraqi about a war in the Middle East that might engage the country
right.
of Iraq. Absolutely. It would be an awfully quiet country indeed if we all had to be members of a certain society that this foreign or domestic policy had its work to do on. Right.
Right. But this is where the left wants to take us. And it's really the natural end of identity politics. And as such, it undermines e pluribus unum. It undermines the ability for us to have a civil society,
a civil society about which under which an honest conversation is one of the most important building blocks. But that's what it has come to. It's been part and parcel of another kind of effort in the cancel culture, isn't it? Right? This is how Ilhan Omar
right.
has gotten away with it. This is how AOC has gotten away with some of it. This is now how evidently the Soros family is trying to get away with it. And as you pointed out rightly in the last segment, if you're conservative, it will never apply to you. It can only be used by the left as a shield from any criticism whatsoever.
Sure. And I just want to remind your listeners that they have every right to hold this particular family in contempt.
Absolutely.
Because Soros' son wrote a piece in the New York Times putting out the message that any criticism of the family and their philanthropic efforts amounts to anti-Semitism.
Right.
So it's not like the flying monkeys have decided to protect their their master on their own.
Right.
This is a directive that went out, and it's so slimy and cynical that it really deserves people's contempt.
Maybe a little praise goes to the Soroses for at least finding one area in which they give a hoot about anti-Semitism. Unfortunately, it's just when it happens to do with something having to do with themselves. David Riaboy, you're a great national treasure. Thanks for spending some time with us.
As are you. Thank you.
God bless you. We'll talk to you soon. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It's a great day when I get to talk to one of my best friends and one of the most important champions in the state, in the country, when it comes to mental health, especially for our youth. And that's my good friend, our good friend, Debbie Moak, co-founder of the organization I'm privileged to be a part of called Not My Kid. Debbie, happy Wednesday.
Hi, Seth. So good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, too. Thank you so much. We've gone through a lot this year, and there's been a few stories here and there, mostly at the national level, a few creeping up in the local level, talking about something you and I have talked a lot about, written about, and been concerned about, which is the mental health fallout, the mental health aspect that parents, families, and youth are having to deal with in response to the coronavirus, the COVID era that we live in, whether it's the increased use of drugs, dangerous substances, depression, even suicide ideation. Would you like to say a word or two about that? We hosted a community call on this earlier, but I wanted you to have a say with our audience on it too.
We did host a call earlier, and I thank you for giving me this opportunity. You know, the data is pouring in, even though, much of it, like in the state of Arizona, is, you know, 6 months lagging.
Yeah.
We're already seeing great concerns here in Arizona and across the nation. Examples, right here in Arizona, we heard Governor Ducey last week at a press conference talked about the leading cause of death for 10 to 14-year-olds in Arizona is suicide. We know that 11% of American adults reported considering suicide in the month of June, and Seth, that's a double from last year.
Right.
You know, we know that overdose deaths are rising throughout the entire country, that hot crisis hotlines are seeing over 1,000% increases in people calling in emotional distress just since March 13th.
Yeah.
So, you know, the important part of this conversation that you and I talk about almost daily is what are people to do? What are the resources? We see the data pouring in. We're going to see more of it, unfortunately. And what do we do?
Right. And the signs and symptoms for parents to think about and to look out for, which you're always so good about as well. Can you stay a second segment? Because this is one of my shortest segments. Can I keep you over the break into the next segment on this topic? This is a great one, and it's important. And one of the problems that's exacerbated it, of course, is that we have gone as a society in response to COVID is we have changed the lives of most families with children when it comes to what their normal routines are. And if you take a normal routine, particularly of a child, and you immediately change it, we should expect that there are going to be these added concerns and these added problems. The truth of the matter is that's why Not My Kid exists. It exists to help in the prevention area of substance use, of suicide, of self-harm, of depression. We now also engage in the treatment of it as well. But the prevention aspect of this, the warning and the early intervention aspects of this for every family have really, and the warning signs for every family have really taken us as a society from a blinking yellow to a blinking red, haven't they, Debbie? I mean, everything has gotten much worse in a situation that we didn't have control on the first place. I have to take a quick break. Can I hold you over and I'll have you respond on the other side of this break? We're talking to Debbie Moak, of course, the co-founder of Not My Kid. NotMyKid.org is the website, and we will be right back with Debbie Moak. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Delighted to have with us Debbie Moak. She is the founder, co-founder of Not My Kid and one of our nation's and state's most influential and respected voices on mental health and especially mental health of our youth. Debbie, as we were saying in the previous break, the coronavirus brought to us a whole new set of, or maybe I should just say an exacerbating set, a worsening set of problems we were already struggling with, issues having to do with substance use, issues having to do with depression, anxiety, issues having to do with even suicide ideation. And we're getting data now nationally that the crises I just mentioned, already serious, have indeed intensified. Why wouldn't they? We're isolating people. We are changing children's lives at the snap of a finger, their social, educational, even athletic and recreational lives. So it's something we've been working on at Not My Kid and helping our community on. I would like you to address the parents as to things that are out there for assistance and help and things to be looking for, if I've missed anything, and anything I did miss, of course.
Yes, thank you, Seth, for that opportunity. I think what I would ask everyone to focus on today is something that I focus on for myself, and that is the dimensions of wellness. Mm-hmm. And now I'd like to quickly go through seven of them.
Good.
And again, these change for me on a regular basis. My physical health, emotional, spiritual, social, financial, environmental, and intellectual. And I this is how one of the tools that I use to keep my own health, mental health in check. And, you know, sometimes I find maybe my physical health, I'm not working out enough. Or socially, I'm not reaching out to others enough. Or spiritually, I'm not doing my devotional. You know, intellectually, I'm not as engaged in things that, you know, reading or being engaged in things that grow me intellectually. So I think that it's something we should all be thinking more about and evaluating ourselves and our kids. We can put our kids through this sort of filter as well, to determine how they're doing. Something I'm seeing right now, Seth, that's somewhat new, not entirely new, but I'm actually listening to kids talk about their concerns and a stressor for them. They see that their parents aren't doing well. So they want to know what, if anything, they can and should be doing to support their parents. Mm-hmm. So it's a new time for us. But I think a time that if I, again, see that I'm not doing well in one of these dimensions of wellness, I put a little more time and effort into that area. If I see that members of my family aren't doing as well in some of these areas, that's something I want to intervene and support them in.
Good advice, really good advice. And it goes along with all the advice that we have been giving pre-pandemic, right? I mean, there are some common sense things we can do. All of that is obviously great advice, especially in these heightened times or heightened and exasperating and anxiety-ridden times. But there are also other smart things we can do. If you, for instance, we have long talked about when it comes to, for instance, the opioid crisis. We have long talked about if you have a prescription, make sure and keep it in a, you know, in a secreted place or a place that's not available for others to use or misuse. We have talked about that when it comes to other substances that can be abused, whether it's, you know, alcohol or tobacco, you name it. Debbie, what are the what are the places people can go to if they start thinking there's a problem in their family that goes beyond the advice you just gave?
That's a great question. I want to first encourage people to go to notmykid.org. And I also want to encourage people, this might be the hardest thing for them to do. Don't wait until there's a problem to connect to resources. Right now, Not My Kid is proactively doing a lot of healthy things with teens. So connect now before there's a problem. There are also early intervention programs at Not My Kids, if that's needed. And normally, most of those referrals came to Not My Kids through schools. Mm-hmm. Right now, without eyes on so many of our youth, you're going to have to be that resource in the home.
Mm-hmm.
If you know of a problem or you suspect a problem or you just have a gut feeling, reach out. There are early intervention programs. And then lastly, I would also say I'm very proud that even in a pandemic when resources are tight, Not My Kid expanded services to youth. Outpatient treatment services are available.
Mm-hmm.
And then 211 in the state of Arizona. It's really a very great resource to get them on the line and talk to them about what you're experiencing. And they are truly a wealth of information and resources in the state of Arizona.
Nicely put, Debbie. Sometimes, and this is as true now as it was true a year ago, as it was true 5 years ago and beyond, sometimes it can all seem a little overwhelming to a parent. And one of the phrases you have used and we have adopted, it's so handy, is, and I'd love you to spend maybe 45 seconds or a minute talking about it, is the notion of just winning this year. Just deal with what's right in front of you and let that be the success. Can you say a word or two about that?
No better time to focus on winning this year, right, than in the middle of a pandemic. We literally don't know what's ahead of us. We know there's more ahead of us, but we don't know exactly what that's going to look and feel like. That can be right there a stopper for a parent to getting the help for themselves or their family that they need. So focus on what you can do today, what you can make a plan for the next week or month, and simply focus on winning this year, where you're at right now. It is far too overwhelming to think about all that could be ahead when you can do something today. You can make changes within your home today that support not only your mental health, but then support the mental health of your kids.
Nicely done, Debbie. There's, in a way, a reverse lens on this. People in recovery know the phrase one day at a time. That's as true with these early intervention issues as well. One day at a time, 1 week at a time, win this year. You don't have to think about next year or the year beyond. Just get your child through this year. Call that a win, and good days follow good days just as good years follow good years. Yes?
And that absolutely is a win. And I think that we want to just right now focus on what we can do, what we can control. There are so many things that we can't control, whether our kids go back to school or not. We can still create a healthy environment. And I would venture to say, all of your listeners, including myself, there's been a tremendous amount of stresses throughout all of this.
You bet.
However, there have been some really great positive things in terms of people focusing on their time and resources on what's really important. And I know that's happened within my own family as well.
Perfect. It's important for people to know that what they may be going through, they're not isolated, they're not alone. In fact, we wouldn't have our organization if they were. Debbie Moak, you are such a blessing to our airwaves, to our community. Thank you for being part of it, and thank you for spending some of your day with us.
Thank you, Seth.
You betcha. We'll go out with one of your songs. How's that? Is that okay?
I love it.
Bless you.
Part of my happiness.
There you go. Bless you, Debbie Moak. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Let me put in a good word for my friend James Wexler of JMG Real Estate. He is a friend, and I know people who have sold their houses with him, and they are all as delighted as I want you to be if you are thinking about or planning on selling your home. I want you to use the only real estate agent I would use if I were selling my home, and that is James Wexler of JMG Real Estate. He guarantees to sell your home at market value, or he'll pay the difference. He can also make you an upfront guaranteed offer within 24 hours of you reaching out to him, if that's more convenient to you. Of course, he'll always let you out of any contract. But James sells more homes over $500,000 than any other agent in Phoenix and Scottsdale. You won't leave any money on the table if you go with James Wexler. Check him out at jameswexler.com. That's jameswexler.com. Or give him a call at 480-386-0711. There's Dana and Chandler. Hello, Dana.
Hello, Seth. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Let me be one of the first to wish you a happy new year, which starts Friday night,
Thank
as
you.
You know.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hoping it will be a happy new year.
Yeah, we could all use one, couldn't we?
Yeah, couldn't we, though? In your opening monologue, you were quoting from Orwell about how history, you know, can be actively changed.
Yep.
And with the internet, we're well aware of, you know, things can be deleted and changed with the push of a button. And it reminded me of the, especially with the new year coming, the genius of the Torah and how it knows us better than we know ourselves. And you know this, but probably your listeners don't. And that is that when a Torah is written because of damage or age or whatever, it has to be replicated word for word, letter for letter. Absolutely no mistakes are accepted or it's not considered kosher. And to me, the genius of that is so incredible, especially in this day and age. And there's no way to have known what the future could have been and would have been back when it was written to know that the genius of it having to be replicated word for word and it cannot be changed over time. And this has been true for 5,781. Is that
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You make a great point. Yeah.
Never ceases to amaze me that, you know, before we even knew that this could have been possible to rewrite history this way, that it is not possible.
You're right. That's a really good point. I need to absorb that further because, of course, and it starts with in the beginning, right? The most famous of words and phrases
right.
that we have to keep in mind. And it has to be perfect. You're absolutely right. It takes a long time to write it, and it's not to be changed. It is indelible, written on our hearts, in our minds, and on our souls. Nicely put, Dana. Thank you for that message.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm Seth Liebson. We'll be right back.